The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Monday Nights Off The Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock. Coming up this evening, we've got the dream team of Andy Dunn and Gerry Thornley popping into studio between 8 and 9 to reflect on a mad Saturday in the Six Nations and, of course, start to look ahead to what's traditionally known as Super Saturday, which could be even better this weekend as Ireland take on Scotland in Dublin. From 9 to 10, we've got Kevin Kilbane with us on the football show to reflect on the FA Cup weekend. We'll be looking ahead to the Champions League with him as well. The last 16 ties begin tomorrow night. We've got a bumper news round then for the next hour. Tommy Rooney's going to hop on the line as well to run through the hurling weekend at around 7:30. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to get in touch on WhatsApp. And Stephen Doyle will be leading the way on this bumper news round. Hello, Steve-o.
Hello there, lads.
Arthur O'Dea is here as well. Hey, Arthur.
Hey, Owen.
Ireland-Scotland fixture this weekend. I think this was always going to be a pivotal enough sort of moment in Irish rugby this year, particularly after what happened the first day out against Paris. And then all of a sudden, Saturday happens and it turns on its head where it could be Ireland and Scotland battling it out for the championship here. If we believe in the power of English unpredictability, that they could do the unthinkable on Saturday night in Paris and actually ensure that this is a championship head-to-head and not just a triple crown head-to-head in Dublin on Saturday afternoon. Maybe we can get very carried away here and think that this is going to be the biggest Ireland-Scotland game of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very interested after all the to-ing and fro-ing what it would mean if Ireland were to win this Six Nations. How do we all feel about it afterwards? Beyond the elation, obviously you'd be delighted, but in terms of the slightly more medium term, are the doubts gone? Are the doubts firmly there? It feels like a weekend where like four of the five countries, with the exception of Italy, who I'll be pretty happy whatever happens, are potentially going away with the prospect of an existential crisis.
Yeah, but it depends what you view sport to be, Arthur. I mean, can this not just be a final point? Can this not just be a full stop? And
that'd be great.
There doesn't need to be any wider implications of performance or weakness or they've won in spite of vulnerability.
As a rugbyman on the periphery, from the outside looking in, it would not seem to me that that is how the sport operates.
Will you be jumping up and down in your living room watching Ireland secure a triple crown? Oh, that's all it is. If they do happen to beat Scotland, for example.
The old TC.
Jumping around, I guess, what, 2003? Was that the big one? Four? I'm not reflective of the nation's mood on this. Would I be jumping up and down? No, but that doesn't mean anything.
But you're not getting bogged down by the further implications that a triple crown doesn't mean Ireland will break their quarterfinal duck at next year's World Cup, for example.
Does Saturday have much of a say on what's to come 15 months or so down the line? I don't know. Possibly not. Possibly that's okay. It would be great if that's okay. Mm-hmm. It would be great if you could play the Six Nations for the Six Nations' sake.
Yeah.
And maybe that's exactly what'll happen. Maybe that's exactly how it's all
going. I can hear the groans from Hamilton Park down in Strand Hill as Arthur's speaking there. The good members of Sligo Rugby Club going, I can't believe this guy is letting us down like this, you know?
Oh, no. I'm all for it.
Has the post sort of Johnny Sexton era not made us sort of wake up and smell the roses a little bit more when it comes to the Six Nations, i.e., you know, if Ireland were to beat Scotland at the weekend, then the Ireland fans would probably take more joy in this year's outcome than last year's outcome, which would be exactly the same, one triple crown versus another triple crown. And the reason for that is because the expectations were low, and by dint of that, it just becomes a heightened sense of the importance of the Six Nations, that every single game post-France, say, this year, has kind of felt like a bit of a referendum on the team, which was a positive one post-England. And I think it would be a very positive one if they end up beating Scotland on Saturday.
Like, the thing was, like, before the tournament started, everyone was saying this is a tournament that will... France are the favourites for England if they perform well throughout the tournament, could win it as well. So they were the two favourites, and then Scotland and Ireland duking it out maybe for third place. Like when you boil it down across the whole tournament, because I suppose listen, in the sports media, we have to react every week to what's happened in the games at the weekend. And, you know, invariably you have to come up with summaries of where your team stands. And ultimately, we only get a real picture of this Irish team at the end of the tournament when it's all finished. See where they've finished or see where they're ranked in the table. It's possible they could finish second or first. And really, is that, I think that is probably an accurate picture, because I think people really got carried away with England, didn't they? Because
most of all the English.
Yeah, 100%. Like it was, and you even had to, what's the rugby podcast? That graphic was going around at the weekend on social media. The one with Haskell and all the lads on it, and they'd all predicted. The good and bad in rugby, yeah. They predicted every match in the tournament, and they all predicted England wins for every single game. There was about seven of them, all England wins. Yeah. And there was just one of them, I think, had predicted a win for France in the game against England, a draw in that game. So
if Ireland had been on a 12-13 game winning streak going into this Six Nations, all of our pundits would have said the exact same thing, and Ireland, it would have just been Ireland, Ireland, Ireland all the way.
Probably, I mean, but like, it's just like the Autumn Nations matches, are they really, they're not great evidence, are they, for what might happen in the upcoming tournament? And it's just, I think the only real surprise in this tournament has been Italy. You know, Italy are the ones who have really kind of surprised everybody. Scotland have done what they always do, which is they blow hot or cold. The Irish performances, like they played poorly against France, not great against Italy. They kind of grew into the tournament as all great, you know, not great teams, but all really good teams in terms. You grow into the tournament. That's what Ireland have done. And in the meantime, they've also discovered a few more players to improve the squad depth across the board. And they're in now with a chance. They probably will win the Triple Crown, and an outside chance of winning the championship. Now, like, I would be, my first kind of prediction, or my first kind of, I suppose, you're kind of inclined to think that France will beat England out the gate this weekend.
Probably.
But like, who's to say England won't, you know, come up with some sort of performance to beat France? Like, would we be surprised?
No, it literally happened last year where France were so much better, I thought, on the day than England, except for on the scoreboard. They butchered a number of big opportunities to kill that England team. They didn't do it. England got the win. And that's actually where their run came from, was that bizarre episode that France had against England last year. And then England were just on the up and the up. I do want to say, not to go back to this point again, and I don't know why I'm coming out to bat for English rugby pundits and English rugby in general, but like, I'm not having the shaming of predictions, the prediction shaming that goes on. It's like nobody can see the future. Like, if those English pundits had known that England were going to be terrible against Ireland, they wouldn't have predicted England would win all these games and win the Six Nations. I think it's a little bit of a ball from the blue. Borthwick is being spoken up by everybody. I think the confidence from within the camp was notable beforehand. And England's collapse is pretty extraordinary. And I don't actually think that, you know, if we rewind the clocks to the end of January, that people are sitting around thinking, geez, this England team is so vulnerable to the point where they're going to get beaten by both Scotland and Italy. For the first, like, never mind Six Nations, Italy had never beaten England in rugby union ever. So to think that they would come from the position they were last year to lose to Italy is just an extraordinary collapse. So I'd give them a reprieve. I mean, they're allowed to be shocked by what happened there in that game, but it is very enjoyable. It's quite delicious to see the whole thing turn out as it did for them. But will they have enough to beat France at the weekend? Maybe Ireland will be very much hoping for that.
It was bad right throughout that England-Italy game. You always felt Italy are going to win this. I kind of never felt, there was just something about that Italy performance. You felt, even when they were behind in the game, it was like, they're going to win this. Like, there's something.
Barry's been in touch to say, at the beginning of the tournament, Borthwick himself is quoted as saying that the France versus England would be the decider. Talk about eating humble pie. I think, to be fair again, I mean, I'm going to bat for England once again here. Steve Borthwick was saying, like, the plan is that will be a Grand Slam decider. The plan is that we will go out and we will hopefully win every single game. I mean, I never thought that was an extraordinary quote. It looks a bit ill-advised at this point, maybe, if you take a certain section of his quotes. But I think it was just straight up. There was a lot of confidence in the team. They wanted to win the Grand Slam. I don't think it's that outrageous for a head coach to be coming out saying, we hope that the final game is a Grand Slam decider in Paris.
It's not outrageous, but I suppose it's potentially ill-advised. And I don't mean ill-advised in terms of, oh no, you should always kind of play your cards close to your chest or whatever. But what it would suggest to me is that he's been left slightly exposed, because obviously he did not have a read on where his team was, if he thought that was on the card.
Well, that's a fair point, yeah.
So just from that point, that you end up getting mocked, you know, by wags like us, but you also end up looking quite foolish, I suspect, to your players.
Yeah, and we give out about people, head coaches, saying nothing in interviews. Yeah. Like,
I guess there's a reason.
Yeah. Connor's been in touch and said, the autumn games don't count. They do when it suits us. We weren't saying that they didn't a few years ago when Ireland beat the All Blacks. Irish rugby supporters are their own worst enemies. Our number is 087-9180-180.
Do you didn't say they don't count.
I wouldn't say they don't count. It's just that I do feel like they can be they're not a great indicator when it's coming into a Six Nations, because they're funny old games, the Autumn Nations series matches, and they're just because, like, and especially like when Ireland play New Zealand or South Africa, they just get themselves so up for those matches. They're almost a thing of their own, like, you know.
Yeah, well, I think when it comes to the Northern Hemisphere versus Southern Hemisphere teams, there can be two different stages of their seasons going up against one another, and then when you compare Autumn Nations games versus a World Cup game, that can often paint a false picture of where teams are at. But all the Six Nations teams should be operating off the same calendar, if not a similar calendar. So, we'll be coming back to this. As I say, keep your opinions coming in. There'll be plenty of rugby on the news round, but you are starting with the Premier Division action in the SSE Electricity League tonight, Steve-O.
Yes, indeed. The 2024 Premier Division champions meet the reigning champions. Talca Park stages the Dublin Derby between Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers. Shells are still seeking a first home win of the season against a Rovers side looking for back-to-back victories. The Reds lost in a 5-goal thriller against St Patrick's Athletic on Friday, while Rovers got back to winning ways against title hopefuls Derry City. Ben Symes is at Talca Park with all the team news for us ahead of that 7:45 kickoff.
Hey lads, a huge clash in the SSE Airtricity League Premier Division here tonight between Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers. Shelburne obviously looking to bounce back from a last minute 3-2 loss here on Friday night against St Patrick's Athletic. Shamrock Rovers looking to kick on from a 1-0 win at home to Derry City 3 days ago. The team news is in. There's five changes from that Shelburne team that lost the Pats on Friday night. So Vessels Field keeps his place in goal. Sean Gannon, Cameron Ledridge, and there's a debut for Zeno Ibsen Rossi in centre half. Daniel Kelly and James Norris both come in wing back positions. The midfield is JJ Lunny, Kerr McEnroy, Harry Wood, and Maya Lundgren. And John Martin will be up top on his own. For Shamrock Rovers, there's six changes from the win over Derry City. Ed McGinty keeps his place in goal. Corey O'Sullivan and Pico Lopez are joined by Lee Grace in the back three. Tommy Savoale and Danny Grant will be in wing backs. Matt Healy, Dylan Watts, and Connor Malley in midfield. And John McGovern and Aaron Green up front. A couple of surprises in that Shamrock Rovers team. It's going to be the first time that Aaron Green and John McGovern have started up top together for the champions. There's no room for Jack Byrne, Michael Noonan, Graham Burke, or Adam Brennan in the starting 11. Joey O'Brien will be disappointed with Shelburne so far this season. Friday night, 3 goals conceded from set pieces, albeit they're without centre half pairing Paddy Barrett and Oren Casey. Harry Wood really is the man in form for the home side here, lads. His goal versus Pats on Friday made it 3 goals from 4 games to start the season. And this is the second game in a very tough run for Shelburne. They obviously had Pats on Friday night, like I said. The champions, Shamrock Rovers, are here tonight. They travel to Derry City on Friday night, and then they host the current league leaders, Bohemians, here this day next week. So 3 points here tonight would really go a long way to easing some of those early Joey O'Brien season concerns. Kickoff is at 7:45.
Just on last Friday night, Ben, Shells 2, St Pat's 3, an absolute cracker of a game. Max Matta with the winner after 92 minutes. Broad strokes on St Pat's seem very, very optimistic at the start of the season. I know they're not your focus tonight.
Well, yeah, they're not our focus tonight, but after the opening day draw with Bohemians at the Aviva, I was at that game, and you kind of thought, what direction are Stephen Kenny's men going in this season? And then they've made a couple of late acquisitions in the transfer window. James Brown has come in from Kilmarnock, the right wing back, who obviously previously was at Drogheda United a couple of seasons ago. he's been huge in the first couple of games he's played. Since he came in, it's actually been three wins on the bounce for St. Pat's, and he had all three assists on Friday night from the set pieces here. And it's that delivery from those set pieces is huge. From Stephen Kenny, described them as a raider going up and down the right hand side. Optimistic signs for Pats. I mean, we probably wouldn't have said after their opening day draw with Bohemians that Bohemians and St. Pat's would be the two teams kind of leading the league here so far this season. A lot of work for the two teams here tonight to do to catch up with them, but it's very early doors, and as we know, it's been a stop start to the season for Shamrock Rovers. Those Friday Monday games really take their toll, as we can see again today. Six changes from that team that played Derry City on Monday night, but Stephen Bradley really will be targeting this game for a win against an out of sorts Shelburne team, albeit they've only had one loss to the season so far.
Okay, very good. Ben Symes there at Tolka Park, where kickoff is at 7:45. Across the Irish Sea, we've got a game tonight in the FA Cup.
Yes, indeed. Very interesting tie in the FA Cup fifth round. It's the last of the fifth round matches. So just in over 2 hours' time, we'll have a complete last eight, and Brentford need to win away from home to make it to that round. The Bees have a good recent record at the London Stadium, having won on their last two visits in the Premier League. Most recently in October, when Thiago and Jensen scored in a 2-0 win. They face a revitalised Hammers team, though, which has been beaten just twice in its last 10 matches in all competitions, against Chelsea and Liverpool in the league. Now, the Brentford boss and a former off-the-ball host, of course, Keith Andrews, has guided the team to seventh in the league and knows the Cup represents another great opportunity to have a crack at European football next term.
Just really approach it, looking to win it, would be the really simple answer. You're right, we're in a pretty good position in terms of where we are. We've treated the cup competition seriously, and this one will be no different. A tricky game. Their performances and results have improved over recent weeks, and they've got themselves into a better position clearly in the league. So it'll be a tricky game for us, but one we'll treat with the utmost respect and do everything we can to navigate through to the quarterfinals.
And if they get through to the last eight, they'll be treating a tie with great respect against Leeds United at home. So that's going to be at the GT Tech Community. Brentford versus Leeds, the tie of the round, Manchester City at home to Liverpool. Also then, Port Vale, the plucky underdogs, will be going to Stamford Bridge to take on Chelsea, while it's Southampton at home to Arsenal. Those ties will be played on the weekend of the 4th and 5th of April.
Wow, that West Ham Brentford game tonight then probably presents like a huge opportunity for them, like swerving Manchester City, swerving Liverpool, swerving Chelsea, swerving Arsenal in the quarter final. There's a big, big chance to get to Wembley on that side of the draw. So really encouraging for them. I'm sure the news has filtered through to the dressing rooms ahead of that clash tonight. So let's move to the Republic of Ireland, the women's team. A disappointing start in terms of results anyway, Steve-O, from their opening two games. Two fairly heartbreaking outcomes for Carla Ward's side.
Yeah, they really were. The Irish centre forward Amber Barrett believes Ireland can score without too much reliance on Arsenal's Katie McCabe and the rest of the qualifiers. The skipper scored in both 2-1 defeats last week at home to France, and also on Saturday against the Netherlands. Carla Ward's team put in performances that were arguably deserving of a point or more. They're bottom of the group though, but just a point behind Poland, who were beaten 4-1 in France at the weekend after their home draw against the Dutch. Barrett has identified one area of their game plan which needs to be better in the doubleheader against Poland next month.
As great as it is that she does score as many goals as she can, but how many other teams in the world rely on their left wing back to score as many goals as Katie has done over her career for Ireland? And I don't think there's any pressure on her to do that, but I think that's her world-class quality that she has, that she's well capable of doing it. But I think now the more we keep the ball, the more we build the ball towards the goal, the more chances people will have to score. And I think that's always, I suppose, since I've been really young, that's always been the mantra. The closer the ball is to goal, the bigger the chance you have of scoring one. So I think that's where we have to, you know, really be, I suppose, hungry for it. Like, you want to get chances, you want to cause bother. And I think that, I suppose, as a striker, that's what I look at. Like, I suppose at times I was getting a wee bit frustrated the last few minutes because there wasn't that many balls coming into the box. And I'm like, put the ball in, cause teams bother, and just see where it goes from there. And I think that's the confidence now. And, you know, we have girls that are finishing these types of chances in training every day. We just have to bring it into the games, and a lot of confidence now going into the next two games.
You saw a lot of encouraging signs in these first two performances, Steve-O.
I did, Owen. We obviously commentated on the game last week, and performances similar enough in that they were, you know, really good, solid defensive performances, albeit conceding the two goals, undone by some brilliance off the bench against the French. Perhaps the defending could have been a little bit better for the two goals against the Dutch. But I thought in general, like we're talking, there's a big gulf in class between the Netherlands and France and this Irish team. But the structures were there. Carla Ward has the team well coached. The back three, I thought, were phenomenal in both games. And then you've got the support in the wing-back roles from Katie McCabe and Aoife Mannion, who I thought were really good. Denise O'Sullivan, hugely missed, I thought, in the Netherlands on Saturday. I thought the link between the defence and the forward line could have been a lot better if she had been playing. But I'll tell you one thing, Emily Murphy has been some fine. She, you know, what she now into double figures, I think, caps. But she was sensational, and I don't use that word lightly. Absolutely brilliant over the two games. She plays up front, dropped into midfield in the latter stages of both matches, but she's brilliant at holding up the ball, taking on a defender, and she gets herself into really good positions as well. So I'd be hugely optimistic against the Poles. Ireland won't have to defend so deep, and to go back to what Amber Barrett said there, the closer you are to goal, the more chance you have of scoring. I think they will be closer to the Polish goal a lot more than they were against the French and the Dutch. So, yeah, definitely some green shoots there.
Okay, before we get on to your next story, Kieran's been in touch to say we'll find out this Saturday if the England win was an outlier for Ireland. Scotland has never won at the Aviva. Last win in Dublin was Croke Park in 2010. Mm-hmm. Gary Ringrose has been invisible for Ireland at this championship, and Furlong is starting to look his age. Positives have been Osborne and Balakoon, and Doak looks to be a player. Conan is getting better with age. Very consistent player. Triple crown decider. Very enjoyable championship. Also, Italy has an absolute superstar in Tommaso Menoncello. Best centre in the tournament. Roll on Super Saturday. I think as we delve a little deeper into this week, we'll start to realise just how weird that game was between Scotland and Ireland last year, when the Scots were fairly confident, I'd say, of at least giving Ireland a bit of a game, a better game than what ended up being a 14-point win for Ireland. But just seeing how good Tuipulotu looked at the weekend, you just kind of remember that screenshot of Tuipulotu laughing in the stands last year. He was out for the game, and a lot of people were very critical of their captain, who was laughing as his team were getting torn apart by Ireland. So they were missing him. And then also there was that crazy head clash early in the game where Darcy Graham and Finn Russell ran into each other, and they both had to go off. And there straight away you lose three of your best backs, or without three of your best backs for the majority of that game. So there was a lot of extenuating circumstances, I thought, at Scotland last year. But the one caveat is that was, of course, Murrayfield, Dublin, as that texter has pointed out, tends to be a different kettle of fish entirely. On to Brazilian football, Steve. We didn't think we'd be talking about this on Monday morning. The Campeonato Mineiro, our favourite competition, has been brought into disrepute. What's going on?
Well, here's the comments from the Atletico Mineiro striker Hulk, who said, "It's regrettable." He added, "We cannot set that example because it ends up having repercussions all around the world. We have a responsibility to safeguard our image and the image of the institution." He was speaking, of course, after the mass brawl during the Campeonato Mineiro final. It was quite the statement from the player, who appeared on camera to have poked the head off a Cruzeiro player who had his back to the former Brazil international. Red cards were issued to 23 players after the mass brawl. Caio Jorge scored the winner in Belo Horizonte as Cruzeiro, managed by the former Brazil boss Chiche, edged their rivals Atletico 1-0 to become the champions of the state of Minas Gerais for the first time since 2019. The violent schmozzle in the dying embers of the game saw security staff and military police intervening. It all began when the Atletico goalkeeper Everson pushed Christian to the ground and planted his knee on the chest of the Cruzeiro midfielder, who had collided with him while chasing a loose ball. Christian's teammates immediately confronted Everson, shoving the keeper onto the goalpost, triggering wider issues as more players joined in while security staff tried to separate the teams. And no red cards issued by referee Mateus Delgado Can during the game, but the Brazilian outlet Globo reported 23 players sent off because the fight stopped the match official from showing the cards on the field. Cruzeiro had 12 players, including the goal scorer Jorge, sent off. The former Atletico Madrid and Nottingham Forest fullback Renan Lodi and Hulk among the 11 Atletico players dismissed. Not the record, though, for the amount of red cards dished out in one match. If I was to ask you to guess, which country would you say the match which has had the most players sent off in one game?
It's got to be something fiery.
Passionate.
Italy, Spain.
No, but want to move closer to the
professional game.
Yeah. Argentina.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The record for the most cards in a senior match was during a game between Atletico Claypole and Victoriano Arenas in the 5th Division of Argentine football in February 2011. All 36 players who were involved in the match sent off for what the referee described in his post-match report as a generalised brawl.
What other kind is there? Yeah. God almighty. It was crazy. I mean, especially, I know you were talking about it earlier, that, was it Hulk?
Yeah.
The hit from... Oof.
There was a lot of punches from behind, straight. Which yeah. It's just really cowardly stuff. You know, a lot of wrist slaps as well. They weren't throwing actual punches. It was like slapping them with the wrist across the head. And like I saw, there's one of the players I saw a photo still of in his post-match interview. And he's got a massive, like Tom and Jerry style bump on the top of his head. Like it was really, really bad. But yeah.
Actually, before we go to break here, Steve-O, do you want to bring us through some of the rugby news today?
Yeah, so we've got some team news from Scotland today. Gregor Brown and Scott Cummings both ruled out due to injury. The starting second rows for Gregor Townsend's team were injured in that thrilling win over France on Saturday. Also ruled out, Duane van der Merwe, albeit he's only started one test during this year's tournament. There are further injuries to out-half Adam Hastings and props Elliot Miller-Mills and Nathan McBeth, who have both featured prominently during Scotland's campaign. Ireland did train today, but without prop Jeremy Lochman, who of course is nursing a calf injury, and he's been ruled out of that Triple Crown showdown on Saturday. Connacht prop Billy Bones linked up with the squad, but there's no other fresh injury concerns after the win against Wales. Munster's Brian Gleeson will also train with the squad this week. The former Munster and Ireland back row Alan Quinlan was on off-the-ball breakfast running the rule over the Ireland out-half Jack Crowley, who won his starting place in the team for the last two games, including Friday's win against the Welsh.
He missed, it was two conversions he missed. It's an awful statement to say that it's, oh, it seems like it's the kicker's fault. It's not. There's loads of other things. But you see the what you can do with Crowley and contact and stuff like that. Yeah. And I think he's far more assured in that situation of physical stuff. Defensively, he was excellent. It's inside in your head as well. Like, it's confidence. It's feeling calm. It's feeling a little bit of love from the coaches, from the fans. You know yourself, when someone is confident, they can nearly flick one over from the touchline.
Yeah, Alan Quinlan there speaking on Off the Ball Breakfast, that piece available to listen back to for Off the Ball members. We've got loads more rugby coming up between 8 and 9 tonight. The dream team of Gerry Thornley and Andy Dunn are going to be with us here in studio. There's more coming here as well on the news round after the break. Tommy Rooney is on the way. Welcome back, Arthur and Steve-O in studio with us. We'll get to Tommy Rooney in just a moment. Steve-O, just fill us in on which National Hurling League match has been fixed for this weekend.
Yes, it is the Division 1A game between Waterford and Tipperary. That will be played at Walsh Park this Sunday afternoon. A loss for the Daisha against the All-Ireland champions would see them make a swift return to Division 1B. It throws in at 2 o'clock. Meanwhile, Kilkenny boss Derek Ling labelled their performance unacceptable in a 35-17 loss at Galway. That win ensures the tribesmen will remain in hurling's top flight for 2027. Limerick boosted their hopes of reaching the final by overcoming the reigning champions Cork by 8 points on Saturday night. Should Cork and Limerick both avoid defeat on the last weekend, they'll meet again in the Division 1 final. Clare maintained their 100% record in Division 1B with a 3-point win at home to Wexford. Kildare ensured they'll be in the second flight next season by beating Carlow, while Laois sealed promotion from Division 2. Waterford remained top of Division 1A of the National Camogie League. Lorraine Bray's goal helped the Daisha overcome Antrim by 116-9 at the weekend to make it 3 wins from 3. Defending champions Cork got their first victory of the campaign, beating Kilkenny 115-9 points, while All-Ireland champions Galway saw Tipperary by 4 points.
Tommy Rooney, how are you doing?
Owen. Very well. You keeping good?
All good. For me, there's two significant results from the weekend, or at least two significant moments from the weekend. It is Limerick sort of showing their level in 2026 against Cork. And then there's the meltdown slash masterclass from either Kilkenny or Galway, respectively, depending on which way you want to frame that. Which is the more significant result?
Oh, I feel like I spent my weekend questioning what I was seeing, you know, between Clare and Wexford and Limerick and Cork. And so I'd say Galway Kilkenny. That's the shocker. That's the
it
big
feels
one.
Like it.
That's the statement. Yeah, I think so. I agree with you, Owen. I think that's the statement win. And, you know, there's a group, a cluster of young fellas from Galway that really kind of showed their class. Aaron Nyland leading the way at the weekend. And like 35 points that's a real scuttering for Kilkenny to have suffered at the weekend. And I suppose Derek Ling has a bit of a job in his hands now to try and get the motoring again for Leinster and their next game in 2 weeks' time.
Their biggest defeat since 1954 is what this represents for Kilkenny. There's no way of framing this other than that being a really negative thing for Kilkenny, because we'll get onto this in a moment, the sort of way in which we couch everything, particularly when it comes to the hurling league, but even to some degree with the football league at this stage of the year, Tommy, is that, once we get to the summer, things might work themselves out. We don't know how much we can read into topic A or topic B. Kilkenny conceding 35 points and putting up only 17 is absolutely something you can read into. That must be an alarm bell going off in the head of Derek Ling.
I think so. Like, I heard Tommy Walsh this morning on Off the Ball Breakfast saying that the Kilkenny crowd need to get out and support them now more than ever. And I don't know, has a little bit of apathy set in around it. Like, I'm surprised that maybe there isn't a bit more noise here. You know, like, why is there such a, I don't know, a laxness about their league campaign this year? Like, where's that bit of aggression? Even in Limerick and Cork on Saturday night. And I was going into that wondering what we were going to see. The first half of that game, there was a savage amount of physicality, a real bit of bite, a little bit of nastiness at times. There was, I think Cork got 6 yellow cards. They certainly had clocked up 6 yellow cards by the time I stopped counting across that game. And Limerick had a clatter as well. But whenever I've kind of covered Kilkenny or watched them recently, I'm not seeing that level of maybe aggression that I think Brian Lohan is maybe worried that Clare haven't received over the last couple of weeks in 1B when it comes to maybe what the Munster Championship is going to throw at them in a couple of weeks' time. So I don't know. I'm struggling with how Kilkenny have kind of built up across this year. I know they have a couple of injuries. I know they're short a couple of bodies. But they need to pull the finger out, I think.
What do you make of this?
It's really hard to know. Like, they were fairly bullied on Saturday. Like, it was it was one of those where you're always kind of expecting for a little while, they'll have their little purple patch. Never came. And then it just kind of came a bit formulaic where they just go, keep firing points over. It's like, Jesus, what will this get to? But at the same time, I don't know, obviously with the exception of Hugh Lawler gone since, but like last summer they were a crazy official's mistake away from getting into an All-Ireland final.
And a wonder goal.
Yeah, exactly. Against the team that ended up winning the All-Ireland. So it always kind of feels to me with Kilkenny, like I don't know. And it's kind of more so in terms of the fan reaction and that kind of aspect that I think it might be very hard to generate that kind of oomph amongst the supporter base, because there is still that expectation that come hell or high water, they'll still be in the mix at the business end of this, that they'll still get through Leinster. There's no fear of them not going through Leinster. It won't happen. They'll get through that. How far they get after that, who knows? But that still brings you up to a quarter final, semi final. You know,
it's funny. Arthur says that one of the top stories on the Irish Examiner this evening is Patrick Horgan's column, and he is asking the question: is it time to ask, will Kilkenny emerge from Leinster this year? So
now they're at the trolling stage. yeah.
Maybe so.
Is it fair? No, I don't think it's fair to ask. Who'll beat them? They'll have to lose, what, 3 games?
Wexford, Dublin, Galway.
We'll all have to beat them. Yeah.
Yeah.
A resurgent
option. Sure. I think Wexford are still in a state of a bit of transition from what I saw at the weekend. You know, I think 24 of their shots came from Lee Chin and Simon Roach. They have a heavy reliance on the two of them, and they're still missing a good few players from St. Martin's too. So, yeah, Wexford disappointed with them yesterday in a must-win game against Clare. So the Dubs obviously in moving well at the moment, relatively speaking. And Galway, Leinster's been disappointing.
Can I make one additional point to that? I'm not suggesting that's a good thing for Kilkenny, by the way, that they're kind of almost automatically going to get that far if they reach a base enough level. They'll get to a certain point in the championship. I think it's probably the same thing that sharpens up the Munster teams, that you now see it, that they have that cutthroat ability, and so many All-Irelands in the bounce are being won by Munster teams that Kilkenny are lacking. So it's kind of strange, back to Tommy's original point, it's very strange that they wouldn't be taking these games more seriously, because they're probably on paper the most competitive games they could get between now and kind of knockout hurling.
The All-Ireland champions have played in the league final for the last 3 years running as well. Like there is a path from that date in the calendar to winning the All-Ireland. Like, I know Tip lost the final last year, but they were in it. The previous year, Clare won the final against Kilkenny. The year prior to that, Limerick won the final against Kilkenny. And I make that point because Kilkenny were in two of the last three finals as well. This has been part of their springtime course. So I accept the point that there is a template here for Kilkenny to arrive in mid to late June with a big say in the destination of Liam McCarthy. But maybe one year that'll be different.
Quite possibly, and it's heading that way. And I mean, you have, when you have people like, I know Liam Sheedy a few weeks ago came out and said, you know, to paraphrase, I don't have exact words, but the quality of forwards wasn't the same as it would have, you would typically have associated with Kilkenny. And for all that, like, so like Tipperary, the record, funnily enough, is 36 points. And Tipperary conceded that against Limerick a few weeks ago. No one's too concerned about Tipperary because they have a recent body of work there. But I'd almost be more concerned about Kilkenny only scoring the 17.
That's it. That's a 9 points with the wind in that first half as well.
That's really low tally, like.
On the Cork Limerick affair, the situation here is that you'd look at the two teams who sort of represent the best rivalry in hurling at the moment. I know that's kind of a semi-controversial thing to say, given neither of them have won the All-Ireland for the last 2 years. I'm not sure how Clare and Tip people feel about that suggestion being brought out there, but there is something about these two teams, Tommy, and there was aspects of the play on Saturday night, certainly from a Limerick standpoint, where you think to yourself that we could absolutely be looking at the 2026 All-Ireland champions from this fixture.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. You could say that, Owen. And it's a dangerous thing to say too, because who on earth is emerging from Munster this year? It's going to be another brilliant championship. But like, yeah, like Ben O'Connor, I got the sense afterwards, I had a chat with Ben for a couple of minutes. I got the sense he wasn't too fussed either way. Obviously a man that doesn't like losing and lost his first game in charge of Cork. But I think, you know, they've used, I'll give you the numbers now. I was having a look at it before the weekend. They've used well over 30 players at the weekend. Damien Callaghan was the 33rd player that he's used across this Division 1A campaign. A lot of them starting a game. At least 30 of them have started definitely a game. 32 have started a game. So that's a savage amount of players to get eyeballs on in your first year in intercounty management and still have a 100% record going into the weekend. And I think he got enough out of Saturday night. There was only a point in it at half time. They had two big goal chances when the game was in the melting pot. Alan Walsh had one disallowed for a pickup and another kind of swipe, and Brian Hayes knocked it down to him. I don't think he'd be too fussed, but I just want to make a point on Limerick's new wave, and they're not that new, but Adam English, the Bud O'Brien, Cathal O'Neill, these boys own this team now. You know, they're really right in the middle of it, and they're going to have a serious influence as the year goes on.
Yeah, I mean, you've made the point here, Arthur, about Kilkenny potentially breaking the mould of their form come the summertime. Does the constant downplaying of league form or not reading into league teams bother you in any way, or is that just the way we always have to be? It's the reality.
It's a bit dispiriting to watch, isn't it? I mean, I don't even do it down, but it's funny after the match, like, and the Saturday, the first game was on RTE and afterwards, and like, it's completely, this isn't a criticism, because it's completely on par with what you'd expect, but like, everyone afterwards was kind of tripping up over themselves in the positive sense or in the negative sense, to say at the end of the day this seismic victory for Galway doesn't really matter. So like, or that it won't matter, or we won't know if it mattered until later on in the summer. And there's a degree of that that makes sense, that's fine. But that's a dangerous thing. That's a dangerous, I find it a dangerous mood to allow creep. Because it was funny talking to our own kind of Colm Bouygues about this, and talking last year about the Munster Championship. That ultimately in Cork's year, that no longer matters now. So the Munster Championship doesn't matter, because that didn't matter, because it didn't do in the end. So it kind of, if we're measuring everything off the very end point, and that kind of, it goes back to the thing about Six Nations earlier on, that point. What are these games for? Like, we get so few games. At most, they'll probably play maybe four times this year, realistically. That was at Limerick and Cork, the extent of it. That would be an amazing year. I mean, it's amazing.
Could be five.
To happen. Yeah, amazing things would have to happen for it to get that high. But say it's only, say they only end up playing twice or three times, whatever, when the league final did write off as well. I just don't know what we're doing. I don't know why it's been allowed go this way, that it's like, well, we'll not treat this seriously. And we'll write into it what we will or we won't.
But that's a Cork specific thing. Like, I don't.
What do you mean?
Like, as in the reason why it's not, you know, the Munster final won't have the same sort of allure about it, because Cork have checked that box out. This is all part of their journey.
Oh, maybe. But like, yeah, Perhaps, but like that, so that's, so where things only matter if it's a surprise. So it wouldn't, it'd be the same for Limerick if they did it, it wouldn't matter. It'd be the same for Tipperary if they did it, it wouldn't matter. So what we're saying is three of the five teams going into the Munster Championship, winning the thing doesn't actually matter unless they go on and do the ultimate thing thereafter. And I'm not saying, I feel that's the way it's creeping, that's the way it's progressing. The league's never been the totem, it's never been the main thing of the league, of the your season. We all kind of understand that. But I do find the rhetoric weird that it is kind of continually, it keeps ratcheting up how little it matters.
I think it'd be a big thing if Tip won Munster. Like, I mean, yeah, 10 years without a Munster title, I think it's a bit, I think it'd be a massive thing if Clare won Munster, and they've won an All-Ireland recently. I just think on the Cork journey has been a bit more linear. They've ticked off the league box, the Munster Championship box. They just need to win the big one. So it's different when you frame it from a Cork standpoint. Like, but there's no getting away, like, from the fact that the first game between them, if there's going to be five meetings, the first game in the championship is obviously the big one, because progression from the Munster Championship is more important than winning the Munster Championship.
Here's a good point from last year. So that first game, that first time they met in the Munster Championship last year, Cork were blown out of the water.
Uh-huh.
16 points.
Yeah. You were there as well, Tommy, I think. Mm-hmm. Amazing day. Amazing, like, atmosphere. Amazing, so surprising. Now, I understand why that takes on less importance when that summer keeps going, because they meet again in Cork win, and that in itself is an interesting subplot. It keeps going like that. But I fear with hurling particularly, less so football, we're already at a point now where everything's built in terms of who's going to win the All-Ireland. And I don't mean that in terms that we always look at that for sport, who'll be at top at the end. But we're at a point now where we are eradicating everything that comes beforehand. We don't even really look into these games. No one's actually looking into these games afterwards, where it's like, what could we actually kind of learn from this or dig into here? It's like, no, don't worry about it. Cork were playing a dummy team. They wanted to lose it. They'll never play that way and thing. Limerick are going too hard for it. They have a week off before the Munster Championship, so they're desperate to win the league. I just, we're so quick to judge it beforehand. I feel we're probably, for a sport that is already pretty limited and getting more so, getting squeezed by football. Yeah, I think there's a bit of we should be a bit fearful of the whole thing being boiled down right to the very end of it, the nub of it at the end, or a few weekends in the year that actually we consider important.
Yeah. Well, it's the nature of this fixture, Tommy. When you look at Limerick and you look at Cork, they will boil down the success or otherwise of 2026 down to one potential game in the middle of July. And I guess that translates into our viewing experience.
Yeah, that's part of it. And look, I actually get both sides of the argument that you're both putting across there. I still think, the Munster Championship is going to matter to plenty. And I don't think you can go hell for leather in every single game across the year. But Arthur, I get what you're saying. I do get what you're saying. But we still got some decent hurling. Worth mentioning Kildare picking up their third win in 1B, securing their position. Leash beating Meath to go back up at the weekend. And the Dubs as well. Dubs put up a big score on down, which essentially puts promotion in their own hands as well. Owen, I know we're getting towards the end here, but there was a wee initiative launch today that I wanted to mention. Could I jump to it now?
Go for it, Tommy.
Yeah, I don't know, did you cop this? But it's called the replay.ie if you want to go and check it out. And it's a collaboration between the GAA, the Alzheimer Society of Ireland, and RTE Archives. And it's essentially, it's beautiful. I was flicking through it a little earlier on. It is a collection of commentaries from Micheál O'Meara-Hertie. So obviously, one of the most iconic voices in Gaelic games. Holds a special place in the heart of many Irish people and GAA fans. And what they're attempting to do is use Micheál O'Meara-Hertie's voice in a kind of reminiscence therapy for people who suffer from dementia. So it helps people remember their past and you know, maybe replaying iconic moments or even sitting with somebody who is struggling with their memory and going through some of these games might be a helpful thing. And it's a very interesting area and obviously a very difficult subject for many families around the country. But I just thought it was such a brilliant initiative when I heard it being launched in Croke Park today. And just to give you a little flavour of what you can expect if you check out the replay.ie, here is a little snippet. We started with Galway today, beating Kilkenny, but this is a snippet of Galway up against Tipperary in the 1988 hurling final.
What a moment and what a sight here in Croke Park, Ballaghclia Éire, and Clare Down of the Van Oer, Jerry Kerwin of Offaly, the referee, ready to start the game, but already the Galway full forward, Brendan Linsky, he's moved out. He's playing at centre forward. Right now, he's almost out at midfield. Referee will check and put him back behind, but Joe Cooney, an interesting switch already by Galway. But Brendan Linsky away out the field and almost in on top of the forward midfielder. But then referee Jerry Kerwin, the Offaly man, he's trying to send them back. Noel Sheehy will stay with him, and he's second. The game will be underway. The Artane boys band have left, and the game is on. Tipperary attacking. John Leahy, the ball to midfield, sent down by Pat Malone of Galway. Pat Malone down towards Michael McGrath, 40 yards out from the Tipperary goal. Michael McGrath has got it, gets it low, blocked inside by Conor O'Donovan. The Nina man has got it for Tipperary. Todden left, strikes it out towards John Kennedy. Kennedy rises, holds Todden.
Yeah, amazing stuff there. Brilliant initiative, the replay launched there today. The voice of Micheál Muirahertig. We'll take one last quick break on the news round, back with more stories. Welcome back. We've time for a couple of more stories here with Stephen Doyle. We might just mention the racing. It's a big week at Cheltenham. And then there's also some golf, Steve-O.
Yeah, day one tomorrow on the Singers Arkell Challenge Trophy Novices Chase is at 2 o'clock. That's the first big head-to-head clash of the week. The best novice chaser in Britain, Lou Lambert, takes on the most talked-about novice chaser in Ireland, Copic de Bord. The main event of the day is the Unibet Champion Hurdle Challenge Trophy at 4 o'clock. Lost a lot of star players over the course of the season, with State Man Sergino and Constitution Hill all fallen by the wayside. The Gordon Elliott trained Brighter Days Ahead will be the one to watch for in that feature. Selective ordering took place at the Old Course in Cheltenham on Monday after conditions quickened to good to soft. Good in places on the eve of the festival. So the ground is expected to be quicker tomorrow on the day of the race. And just to finish on golf then, Owen, it's expected Rory McIlroy will tee it up at the fifth major, the Players' Championship this week, despite suffering a back injury at the Arnold Palmer Invitational. The Masters champion was forced to withdraw from the tournament before his third round on Saturday due to back spasms when he was on the practice range. McIlroy is set to defend his title at Augusta National at the start of next month.
Stephen Doyle, thank you very much for that. Now, Braeburn Coffee is the official coffee partner of Off the Ball. With new oat lattes, cappuccinos and flat whites, Braeburn Coffee is the one you want to be oat official with. It's available now at all Braeburn Coffee self-serve locations. Braeburn Coffee oat drinks, oat amazingly easy. After the news, Monday Night Rugby with the Dream Team.